Thank you, Lee, for allowing me to talk to you today, and thanks for everyone sticking with me just before lunch. My name is Tom Ducey. I'm a microbiologist with ARS. And before I give the talk, I'd actually like to acknowledge the people that worked extensively on this project, especially because I left two of them off on the abstract. Pat Hunt was the PI on this. He got the funding from NRCS. He worked with Jared Miller, did a majority of the sampling, spent a lot of time in the Delmarva and the North Carolina regions. Megan Lang was with the Forest Service. She ran point on this. She was our connection with NRCS. She's now moved on to the University of Maryland. And then Ariel Soji, who's with me in Florence, he's our soil scientist, and he did a lot of soil characterization with me. So I'm going to be talking today about denitrification in these restored wetlands in the North Carolina coastal plain, but I'm actually going to give you a tour of basically the entire work. Now, we're involved in the CEEP, the Conservation Effects Assessment Program, in the Mid-Atlantic region. So we sampled in the Delmarva region, as well in the Pocosin region of North Carolina. Now, the Pocosin region of North Carolina is very different than the ultisols of the Delmarva region. Here is one of the restored wetlands. Those were about 8 to 10 years into their restoration process. They were hydrologically restored wetlands from agricultural fields. Now, those agricultural fields had been actually wetlands that had been cleared, so we're actually trying to get them back to their original state. When we tried to do that, when we were looking at sites, we wanted to pick sites that we could compare to natural wetlands and then agricultural land, so we tried to keep it within a 1 kilometer area. For the North Carolina region, that natural wetland region was the Pocosin Lakes Refuge. And here's just a picture of the prior converted farmlands as well. And yes, that is a black bear running around. So Jared had a little bit of hazardous duty pay. So here's a map, two maps of the of two of the locations. We had 9 sites total. We split them up into, we had 3 natural wetlands, which we know at least for the last past 100 years have been untouched. 3 converted, those are the wetlands that had been drained and used as agricultural lands, and then the restored, those agricultural lands that are put back into wetland status. As I mentioned, the restoration has been about 8 to 10 years, and they are very poorly drained soils. And you could see the proximity of all of the sites to one another, and we try to keep it between a 1 to 4 kilometer range. Now, when we went into these sites, we used ArcGIS, and we sampled along an elevation gradient. CID 0 was the lowest point in those fields, up to CID 3, which was the highest. Now, these are relative elevations. They're not exact for every site that we've gone into. But the CID 0, as you would expect, are the wettest portions, since they are the lowest. And here, these numbers next to them actually indicate emissions. So, as you would expect, in the wetter summer months, emissions are much higher in the lower points, and then you really see no effect in emission at the higher elevations. So we went through a number of experimental phases. The first phase was actually we went through and did high throughput bacterial sequencing and looking at N2O emissions. That has been published in Applied Soil Ecology. We then, based on that data, actually thought that it was best to split the Delmarva and the North Carolina analyses separately. The Delmarva has been published in Ecological Engineering. The North Carolina data, which I'm going to talk about today, has been submitted to Journal of Environmental Quality. And then we took roughly the 40,000 data points that we accumulated in these data analyses, and now they are a part of a spatial analysis that looks at the larger CEEP group and for modeling. So since I'm going to be focusing on denitrification, here's just a simple schematic of the nitrogen cycle. It is microbially mediated, so we have a number of steps. And since it's microbial mediated, I can actually go in as a microbiologist and look at the gene diversity and abundances. Now, I didn't look at all of them. We looked at NAZI primarily because our group and others have shown that when you look at the NAZI abundance it actually correlates pretty well with the ratio of incomplete denitrification compared to the total rate of denitrification in soils. So we use that as basically our indicator for denitrification. So here was the first study, the bacterial sequencing. We looked at 12 sites. We had a total of roughly 60 sites, but we sampled. We looked at 12. We looked at a spring and fall sampling and looked at roughly the first 2 inches. We extracted DNA with a mobile kit, and then we sequenced high throughput on the V1 through V3 regions of the 16S rRNA gene. And Laurel, my postdoc at the time, assembled the data and published it, but we see that the North Carolina sites separate as compared to the Delmarva region in both soil properties and bacterial OTUs. And so that kind of led us to the hypothesis that if these soils are so separate in both their microbial component and their soil properties, that they may actually be responding to their restoration attempts in dissimilar fashions as well. A little bit deeper into the microbial populations, roughly 20% of the microbial OTUs are found in all the soils that we sampled, but a lot of the OTUs are actually management specific. So there are distinct populations that are driven by the management practice that they're under. Now the phyla, Formicutes is the largest phylum that's found, followed by the proteobacteria, and then the Bacteroidetes is the third most common. As I mentioned, we followed up the bacterial sequencing with photoacoustic nitrous oxide emission analysis, and really just the bottom graph is the one I'd like to point out, but essentially the lowest elevation, the wettest elevation, sees the majority of the emissions, and that's to be expected. So I think that the narrative of the North Carolina data makes sense. You get a better understanding of that and appreciation of it if we look at actually the Delmarva region first. And so this is how we run the DEA. Now there's 4 bars here on this graph, and it's different treatments with these soils. So we collect these soils and we treat them in 4 different ways. The incomplete DEA is measuring just nitrous oxide that's coming off of the soil, so we basically just bottle them up and pull samples. Complete DEA is the acetylene block, so it halts denitrification at the nitrous oxide reductase step, which is the NAZ step, and forces all of the nitrogen into nitrous oxide. Now the potentials, those are, we add nitrate to the solution to see if these soils are nitrate limited. So the potential incomplete is basically just the incomplete with nitrate added, and then the potential complete is just that complete, the acetylene block with nitrate as well. So no surprise, these soils are nitrate limited. I think basically all the soils that I've tested up and down the Atlantic coast are nitrate limited. This is no different. But the one thing to point out is that if we're looking at the ratio of the potential incomplete to the total amount of enzyme activity, we're losing more than half of our nitrogen to incomplete DEA. And so this incomplete denitrification, this nitrous oxide greenhouse gas, we're losing more than half of our nitrogen to that greenhouse gas. If we look just at the complete DEA and do comparisons between the managements, we actually see that the converted sites, the agricultural sites, have the highest amount of enzyme activity, and then the restored and the natural sites are statistically similar. So basically just the take-home here is that the converted site does have the highest amount of enzyme activity. If we compare that to the NAZ gene abundances, we see a similar pattern. The NAZ gene is most abundant in the converted sites again. And then the second is the restored, and then finally the natural. So if you kind of envision it, we're seeing a shift away from the, so as we restore these sites, we're seeing a shift away from converted abundances down towards the natural, and they're somewhat in the middle. And we see a lot of this with the soil characteristics as well. There is an agricultural legacy to these restored soils, but they don't look like agricultural soils anymore, but they don't look like natural soils either, the wetland soils. So given that, here's the North Carolina data. Here is an ordination of the soil physical chemical properties. The red here, those are the agricultural soils, and there is a lot, because of the management practices and the tight farming practices, there is not as much variability in those sites as there are for the green sites, which I guess I didn't pick the best colors here, but the natural wetlands here. And then after we've got about 8 to 10 years into it, but we see that the variability is enhanced now in the natural, in the restored sites, and there's a shift over for roughly half the sites more towards a more natural like profile. Once again, if we look at the DEA, the treatments, no surprise, the soils remain nitrate limited. But now if we look at the percent incomplete, we've actually dropped down in the Delmarva region, was 54%, and now here in the North Carolina soils, we're down to 43%. So now we're losing less than half of the nitrogen to nitrous oxide. The reason we think that is because of the higher C-to-N ratios. We've found that when you have a C-to-N ratio above 25, that we get more complete denitrification. So it pushes the reactions to dinitrogen gas. And the C-to-N ratios of these soils is around 45, whereas with the Delmarva region, it's around 17 or so. If we look at the complete DEA and just for the lowest elevation, we see now we've got a shift where in the Delmarva region, the converted was the highest. Now the natural wetlands are the highest, followed by the converted. And then we have a low enzyme activity for the restored sites. If we compare that to the NAS-Z gene, actually here again we have a lower abundance in the restored sites as compared to the converted and the natural, which are statistically similar. And so I think the word a crash in the populations and activities might be too strong of a word, but we're actually seeing something's going on with the restorations here in the North Carolina sites that is really throwing the microbial populations for a loop. Whereas in the Delmarva region, we saw what seemed to be a transitioning from the agricultural lands to the wetlands. Now it seems like we've overshot and the microbial populations are suffering. Now, whether they rebound or not, who knows? And we actually don't really know why this happened, but I guess that gives us something to look to further research. And I know a lot of people are interested in phosphorus. We looked at phosphorus. We actually looked at a number of soil variables, but really within the 8 to 10 years of restoration, we do get a lot of the phosphorus that has been applied as fertilizer gets flushed out of that system. So phosphorus no longer seems to be a problem here. So with that, I'd just like to acknowledge some of the other people that made this project possible. William Brigman did a lot of the sampling with Jared Miller. Tony Schreiner and Katie Lewis were in my lab. They did a lot of the DNA extractions, the qPCR. And Mark Walbridge is our national program staff and acts as that bridge for the funding. And I'd especially like to thank Bill Efland of NRCS, who funded the project. And so with that, I've got a couple minutes for questions. Thank you.